Okay, well, let's call a meeting to order. It is 4:08 on the 20th of June, 2019, in the main office conference room. We do have quorum. We have seven members present. Steve Hollister, Maneka Dioro. Maneka, did I get that right? Okay. And Nick Pape, Steve Carbolito, Lori Sanchez, Terry Brooks, and myself, Bob Perrin. So we do have a seven-person quorum. So let's, you guys want to take a look at the agenda and make any changes or a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Terry Brooks moves to approve.
Second.
Seconded by Flori Sanchez. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The agenda is approved. Do you guys want to take a look at the minutes from May 23rd, 2019, and make any comments or changes that need to be made?
Director Dioro inquires a lot.
Oh, don't think of it
that
way.
That's good. That's how you learn. Yeah.
Steve Carrera just arrived, so that gives us eight.
The last time.
Had my red pants
on. Yeah, where are
they? Going to wear them again today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much. Anybody need
to put those for them? Not eating.
Really small budget.
Yeah.
Second.
Okay, seconded by Maneka. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we're good to go. Now we'll move on to the administrator's report. Mr. Leon Guerrero.
Good afternoon, directors. I'm going to do something a little bit different. We're going to do the old business and the new business is basically going to be the updates. The one thing I do want to bring out is if you haven't registered and if you want to attend, you desperately need to talk to Conchita or Jules so they can put you on the listing.
Yes.
We've basically closed it. You'll get the update on the PIEC, but this is of paramount importance if you guys want to be attendees of our conference. We've basically closed it off, and people are emailing me directly, and I forwarded it to Conchita and her team, and they are making sure that people are there. So
I mean,
those.
I need to add that it's not just people, but we're talking like the Admiral and
right.
in general.
Yeah.
As of what, today?
Yes.
That's what we're getting.
Do you have the agenda?
Yes.
If you can only attend in and out. And
the schedule is all online because we're going to
and also it's
paper like
yes.
as much as
and
possible.
It's in here.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. We've provided the agenda. So I will. That's the only thing I'll say about PIEC. We've got that whole part coming up in old business. What I'd like to request from the board is, I was informed by our PIO that there is a public law that requires that the board do a evaluation of the administrator. And so what we provided in here is a blank form for you guys to vote on if that is suitable for how you guys want to take it. If not, then you guys can develop a form and we can proceed with that. To try to make things a little easier and kind of what we do interagency is I put together I filled in some of the blank form achievements that have been done. And first off, I want to say they're not necessarily my achievements. They're the agency's achievements. Okay, I've just happened to be lucky enough to sit in this position while these things have been done. So, there's tons and tons and tons of things that we can list. These are just some of the big ones. I have it done already for you guys to look at it, or we can just do it from scratch. And at that point, I'll sit back, let you guys decide how you want to move forward. If you want to go with my self-evaluation, I can pass it out to you guys and we can make more copies. I just made two, one for me to read to you guys if you want. And one for the board chair. We can make a copy for every one of you if you guys want to proceed with my self-evaluation. Other than that, it's your decision. So with that, I'm going to step back and let you guys figure out how we want to move forward.
I think the first order of business would be if we're going to approve this format or if we wanted to make any changes to it or if you guys feel that this is sufficient to analyze the performance of the administrator. So if you guys are okay with this, maybe the first step is we approve the format, and then...
Is this a brand new format, or has this been established?
It's,
it looks pretty...
We've never done
this. Never happened before in the history of the...
But by law, it's supposed to be every 6 months the administrator gets it out.
I think it's supposed to be 6 months after you're appointed
the government-wide?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And so we're making sure that we do this with you guys.
Sorry, every director does this?
Supposed to.
Every agency that has a governing board. Yeah.
I think one of them got in trouble, too, didn't they? Gura or got a lot of publicity over it? Was it the Gura board, Nick?
I think that was for something else.
Oh. Was there a board that gave their director administrator a raise and they didn't have
okay. That's
so
EPA. GPA.
GWA.
I don't want to get us wrapped up into that, right?
Come on.
Well,
jump right in.
Well, please. What I'm trying to convey is there's nothing that, from what I can tell, that requires a performance evaluation for an upward pay increment. Okay? But I'm not a classification or a pay expert or anything.
Right.
But what we do know is that the administrator requires a performance evaluation 6 months from his confirmation by the board and every 12 months thereafter.
Okay.
So this is an opportune time for us to square this away because it has been 6 months
since his appointment
under this administration.
Right.
And so we just want to make sure that we're complying with that part of the GCA.
Right.
Our boarding commission is supposed to do this.
And then we're free to come up with our own criteria and our own format.
Correct. So that basically comes from the normal GovGlob performance evaluation. We've modified it to fit the administrator and just trying to put some things in. But all of the classified employees fill out a similar performance evaluation, and that's how they get their pay increments. If they get satisfactory to outstanding, and that's basically how the GovGlob works on its pay scale.
In terms of this format, it's really is the biggest part of it, the performance standards and the metrics at the bottom of the first page. That's
Sure. Just what the statutory provision says is that each performance review shall document the performance accomplishments and respective governing board's reasons for retaining the chief executive. However you do the format is up to you. You just have to, you know, you're going to document performance accomplishments and reasons for retaining.
Right. Thank you, Chrissy.
And those performance standards, Nick, I think that's something that I believe that the agency uses internally already. Is that correct?
Right. So to much of that kind of mirrors our EMAS administrator and our Air and Land administrator duties. Yes, you guys have performance specs, but because Walter is unclassified, there is no performance spec for him that exists.
Right. So we just kind of had to throw something in.
Yeah, so in addition to that, there are duties and responsibilities that the administrator is statutorily bound to perform at the board's order. So those are in there, and the accompanying statute is listed there, so you'll see like a 10 GCA section,
yeah,
4 or 5, whatever.
Yeah,
so those are the things that are spelled out, and so because there weren't any standards, we developed this with our administrative services division. So just to give you guys an idea of how we should weigh the administrator's performance and accomplishment.
Right. And again, this is all your guys' decision. If you want to rate me or grade me on something else, it's your call. This is something we're just trying to help you along.
Yeah.
If you're not bound by this at all, this is just trying to provide some guidance. Because when I found out about it, to be honest, I was like, how do I write a PE for administrator? I've done it for my other positions, but I didn't know how to do this. So this is our best shot at it. But again, it's your call.
And I'd like to add that the boards and commissions that do make this a regular practice all have different ways of evaluating their chief executives. So we just kind of wanted to put something together for your convenience and for your consideration.
Okay.
But that's really your call on the policy.
Right.
And so I guess the list here right now is kind of a combination of your internal metrics for the employees of EPA plus some statutory requirements.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And again, the hardest part being the administrator is you oversee every single individual.
Yeah.
So again, the accomplishments a lot of the time is theirs that I just oversee. Mm-hmm. So if that was the big thing. What do I say is mine? That's really not mine. And it's the agency's. So that kind of thing is, which is what made it difficult.
Yeah. I think it makes sense if it's kind of boiling up what those are,
right,
in terms of the metrics and then the accomplishments.
How do you gauge the 90% of the time? Is that just self-evaluation or is that?
So like the 90% that we incorporated that, again, Nick had mentioned that we utilized some of the EMAS administrator and the airline administrator. And so those percentages enabled, that's when I evaluate them, and they do their self-evaluation, and I concur and look it over. That gives them the ability to get the outstanding rating versus just a satisfactory rating. And that's down at the outstanding rating when everything is awesome as far as budgetary-wise, then you get an outstanding rating. In the GovGlob budget system, you actually get,
3.5% one-time
increment.
but the 90% is a Department of DOA administration requirement where a statistical metric has to be applied.
Right.
So,
but that doesn't necessarily have to be done for...
It doesn't have to be, yeah, no, but for him it doesn't have to be, but
right.
that metric is a DOA standard, and the percentage is just
right.
A number that you have to, you know, do your job 90% of the time correctly
right.
to be able to do it. So that number can be based upon each department's
right.
own.
So 90% is your basic, your grade.
So you picked it at
yeah.
93. If you do accomplish 93, then you get the 3% if the budget allows and if the legislature allows these things to occur.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just being realistic,
yeah.
you can't be 100%.
Not for everything.
Not for anything.
No.
So it has to be a realistic, achievable number.
I don't think Walt, as a FinCast employee, is you don't have the ability to receive merit bonuses, right?
No.
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 And the governor has, all governors have frozen merit bonus for the last ten years.
Yeah.
So that's just out there. But it's part of the Department of Administration's evaluation process. For classified employees.
And how would we, as a board, I mean, would it just be here at this meeting that we'd have to
not
do
at
the
all.
Grading? Or
you guys call it up. This is something we get
and
to make it easy. If you want to do, like, separate interviews with me, if you want to do separate interviews, this is what you guys determine what you want to do.
Would we go into an executive session to do this?
I don't know.
No.
We would not do that.
But
and they can't
on personnel matters, performance.
Right.
Not raised.
Mm-hmm. So again, you decide how you want
to
do this.
Is there a time?
Yeah, well, it's blanked right now.
We
yes,
would fill that
I
in.
Well, I wrote
you
one
have your own
for
yourself
again, self-evaluation.
Because unless we go item by item and ask,
right.
We're not going to know.
Right. So again, how you guys want to do it is your call.
And what's the due date? When do we need to do this by?
Well, it's 6 months after my approval, so June is 6 months, but I'm sure since we've kind of never done it before, if we go into it would be preferred to do now, but I'm sure if you want to take time to do it, that's your call.
I think if we get this done now, it positively demonstrates our transparency in terms of following the law on what the board is supposed to be doing. It sets a good example.
Right.
For everybody at the table, essentially, it's being carried out in the time limit that it's supposed to be carried out in. And I think it would bode well if we did have the evaluation done today.
And I apologize we didn't talk
know.
About it yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. One issue I see is how do we know if you're meeting these?
But so what I've done on the one that I filled out is actually filled out some of the things that we did. So I have one that has
your
self-evaluation that I could provide, and you can use it as a guide, and then you guys can decide if, again, we're trying to make this as painless for you guys, but you guys, it's your call how you manage it from.
Yeah, but I don't know if we'd be doing our due diligence if we just copy and paste what you did for your own self-evaluation.
What I'd like is maybe if you could give us that
right.
so that we could see what you believe
okay.
that you've done,
okay.
and then let us have, you know, until the next meeting to look at it.
Right.
We can
okay.
also look at the form and see if we're
right.
happy with
that's,
it.
That's quite okay.
I don't think we should rush into making a decision just
not asking you to do that.
So
yeah,
because that makes somebody else happy.
That would look bad too.
Yeah. Not asking that, but it was disclosed that we should be doing this, and so I want to make sure that we do everything according to the law. Yes.
I think that we can.
No matter what happened in the past, yes.
So we get it by email?
You guys tell, again, this is your call.
Yeah, just email that to us.
Okay.
Would we want to approve the form? Do you think we'd be ready
yeah.
to approve the format at this meeting?
Sure.
And then get a copy of the self-evaluation, and then each of us individually look at it and maybe make some notes on our forms and
then
kind of
when that comes up again,
then we come to the meeting.
I think this is a good start.
And again, that myself and the staff is open for you guys to meet with and talk to if you want to do that. That's what, if that makes you feel comfortable,
yeah.
that's what you guys should do. I'm not here to dictate how you guys manage. It's your call.
Well, I would move to approve the format.
Okay.
I would want to see what outstanding means, what highly satisfactory means, like have that a little bit more detailed as what the ratings equate to.
I think it's up to us. Yeah. Oh, okay. I think it's kind of up to us to define those things.
Yeah,
so we can...
And again, you don't even have to use that. We just use that because it's part of the government reform. Because for this position, and what you guys are doing is retain, or ask me to step down. That's basically what you guys are doing.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can go as specific as
the
government
ratings. If that's
the
question, then...
Yes.
So that's, yes, this is a format. It's used, it's similar to formats used in other types of performance reviews, but for this particular review, that's ultimately the punchline.
Is retained or asked
there's
to step up.
There's a lot of shades of gray in here, but ultimately it's black and white.
It's just yes or no.
Exactly.
Got it.
And since you guys are the ones that voted me in January, or the board did, or because I don't go, the administrator of MEP does not go for in front of the legislature to get confirmed. The administrator gets confirmed by this board. Mm. So that's why this is just a matter of after 6 months and then after that every year, it's your call to retain the administrator or to ask him to step down. Yep. So that's again, you can change the format to be retained or...
And that's it?
Yeah. That's basically what you guys are looking at. The percentage and the outstanding and stuff is... would be nice, but it's not required because it's you guys just keep deciding what you want to do with the administrator at their sitting, which is me right now, but I'm trying not to talk in me. It's what you guys overall have to do.
Yeah, it might be kind of hard for you new folks to have a large input because you've only been here for a couple of meetings, so it might be a little challenging for you guys to really weigh in on a lot of it other than to look at what Walt is provided. And I was thinking, doesn't USEPA do a review to
They do an agency review.
Do you think any of that would be helpful for because they would know if if you're 90%
so again like I indicated, you could talk to staff next week during the conference. John McCarroll and Carl Goldstein, even the regional administrator, will be here. If you guys want to engage them on it, please do. This is how you guys evaluate to retain or remove at this point myself. So
we have a motion on the floor for approving the format.
I'll second.
And a second there from Steve Carrera. All in favor on this format to go forward with and begin the process with?
Aye.
Opposed. Okay, so this is the approved format.
Those are, like I said, those are just kind of, we brought them from two of the division heads that, the upper management kind of threw those performance standards in. That's why the numbers are there. That's not as important for your review.
It seems like it's saying that the board of directors came up with the standards. It seems to indicate.
Some of them are by law, as Nick indicated, the ones that are talk about the GCA. Those are the requirements that I have. The others are just kind of things that we've put together. I had a really hard time trying to figure this out. So
It could be more as approved by the board of directors. Yeah. It's probably meaning more of that versus us creating it from scratch.
And then the rubric is basically like a 5-point rubric.
Steve, did you have a question?
Yeah, so in addition to having a poor performance review for the administrator, I think it would also be important to do a performance review of the board, the secretary of the board.
Oh, I think, Walt, do you do a review of Arlene, or is that something we do? We've never done it.
Because it's the salary is set by the board.
Right. So, it's kind of, it would be, I think it would be dictated by you guys, because she is the board secretary first, and then my assistant second. So
she's a dual role.
Right.
Yeah. So we could do that as well. Your guys' call.
Can I just repeat what Nick said earlier? This isn't really tied to setting a salary.
Right.
There's a separate provision that says that the board is going to do these periodic reviews.
Right.
So it's a completely separate thing. It's not
right.
it's not mm-hmm. tied to that at all. It's
yeah,
just a different requirement.
Just with respect to the administrator, to the
right.
chief executive. So
right.
yeah.
and
it doesn't tell us to do any other members or their privilege. I don't think she's classified, right?
No.
No.
It's just the same as myself.
So,
It's in the section of the law that just deals with boards and commissions in general. It's not in the section that deals specifically with the Guam Review Board. I'm just saying. So it's a completely separate process, and it's not tied to salary. It's just
sure.
it's just a duty of the board to review the
okay.
performance.
But if.
But
I think
if you're right that if you wanted to evaluate the board secretary, she is your board secretary.
And you just started as well, right?
April.
So basically when we started.
Yeah. Right. Correct.
Yeah. No, I'm not just saying if it's time sensitive, but I'm just looking what I've read in the news of
the rules of
basically people who are hired by the board, and then what's the supporting documents for justification.
Okay. This is the board's call. We will provide you any input or information you need. And like you said, what you're reading, that's what we're trying to avoid here.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Okay,
so
Walt, so you're going to send around our...
The self-evaluation, yes. Sure.
And then at the next meeting,
we'll bring our
forms back.
Sure.
And if we choose to interview or talk to anyone in between now and then, that's up to us
I would recommend going through Arlene, the board secretary, to set up the meetings.
Okay.
And then that way she can have you guys sit down and...
And then let all of you know if we decide to do that personally, or...
No, you can just do
it. Okay.
I'll probably talk to John McCarroll and
that's the guys you might want to talk to as well.
The
federal guys that have been working and
okay.
have seen the difference between some of our past administrators and our present administrator.
Big difference.
So we'll come back with all our comments.
Yeah.
We can discuss it at the next meeting.
Sure.
We'll mm-hmm. consolidate it all in one
sure.
piece of paper,
yeah.
what we choose to keep and not keep, and then we can sign off on whatever
sure.
decision. So let's try to shoot for finishing this on the next meeting.
Okay.
If we could do a Google Doc or something like that where we can communicate.
Can we do that outside?
Or is that something?
Again, you got open government law.
Yeah.
It's because of,
okay. If it's a working document, though, it's...
Maybe Kristen would have to look at that. I'm not
any attorney by any means, but knowing what Gura went through when they had their side meetings all the time that nobody was privy to, I don't know if Google document would be
okay.
Yeah, we can
yeah.
bring it here.
I mean, you guys can have special meetings if you want and call it with the media. No, can't do that.
You can talk to one person, right?
Only one at a time.
Okay.
Yeah, you could talk to one other person, I guess. But
right.
If you go,
within the board.
Yeah,
okay.
If you go two or three people, then you're holding a meeting.
Right.
And so then you can't do that. That's the bad one.
Okay,
so this is going to be a little laborious. So we're going
yes.
to have our thoughts here and
is,
pick and
that's why three of us are never seen in public.
I like the eyebrow look when you said that. That was good.
It's all in the delivery.
There you go. Got it.
Yeah. I mean, just along these lines, to minimize duplication of effort as well, it sounds like there's certain conversations that can be had. It's not like multiple board members might need to talk to the same person. So I don't know if we just want to coordinate, how we can coordinate around that. I know I'm going to be off island too in the next few weeks, so I won't be able to go to the conference where you guys mentioned some people might be.
Yeah, I guess, if a couple people approach, but if a third one comes in, then you probably want to be careful about that, because then you could be seen as holding a meeting. So I don't know that there'd be three people together. I guess just be mindful of that if there's an approach to one of the other officials and we're talking official business.
And let me just also mention that there's also a statutory provision that says the performance reviews that are required under this law shall be made public.
The final.
Yeah.
But any working document or
right.
Any drafts.
Yeah,
any drafts is fine.
I'm just so you know that what comes out of this is going to be a public document.
And is the self-evaluation also a public document?
It says the performance reviews required under this act shall be made public.
But not the personal
self-evaluation.
So they
document.
Won't see that if it is a lot of the same, that it's like verbatim from the one that he did for himself.
His isn't a required document. Ours is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you guys want to proceed?
So you can just send us the email it to us.
And I'm just comfortable that a lot of these are regulated by, if you don't turn it in, you don't get your funding. If you everything is
pretty much for the other divisions, correct. Yes, correct.
This is the budget. That's the smallest budget.
Yeah, we are.
That is a tiny budget.
We are 55 strong and working hard. Connie's over there. She can explain the budget better. But yeah, so if you want to move on.
Okay, so that's the plan. This is the approved starting point. We'll get that self-eval. Please be looking at it. Talk to anybody you think you need to within the agency or on the federal side. And make notes and kind of see where you would be on these top areas of performance ratings and things like that. Just be thinking about that. So, okay, I think that's put to bed.
Okay.
Are you all done?
Yeah, you need some water?
Oh, no.
I didn't mean to choke you up there, sir.
Okay.
And that will conclude the administrator's report.
Okay, all business. Air Force stipulated request for continuance.
Right.
Are we on the NOV list?
No, not yet. The old one, the original Air Force, the continuance.
Just the one.
Just like
the...
Yes.
The disinfection?
Right.
Okay, yeah. So the Air Force submitted their operator logs. We completed our internal review of the operator. We went back and forth with the Air Force a couple of times. We are now at the point where it looks like we're in agreement on how many days they're out of compliance, and now we're at the stage now of figuring out what the fine will be.
Right. So
it's not final, though,
right.
Yet. There's still some more steps that have to be done.
So the key note behind that is that we are still engaged in discussion with the Air Force. Kristen went so far as to make sure that if you guys needed a hearing officer, and you may want to discuss that because that's a different change from the last AG. So about hearing officers now.
Yeah, just that I have indication that the AG, the current AG, would most likely provide me.
Right. Versus the last AG that said that agencies would have to find their own. So I think we're moving forward on that aspect, at least with this AG.
That's good.
Yes. But the good news is that...
hire another lawyer.
Yes. So the good news on that is it's still ongoing.
So they're going to appeal, it looks like?
No.
Oh, okay. So we don't...
Not at this point yet.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on how the numbers work out for them. Okay. Because the first round, based on the lower number, they were satisfied, I think, with that plus a supplemental environmental project, which would be to provide training for water operators for the whole island.
Mm-hmm.
But we may be looking at a larger number now, a larger base number.
Yep.
It's a little bit up in the air right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The next item is PIEC final update.
Oh my goodness.
We're there.
Okay. We're there. We will be anyway. Okay. Some of the speakers will be coming in Thursday and Friday. Definitely most of the workshop speakers, which workshops begin on Sunday, will be arriving Friday. Is it Friday? Yeah, they'll be coming in on Friday. So workshops begin on Sunday. It'll be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And we're talking about three SWANA workshops and certification. That'll be on composting, zero waste, and integrated waste management. We also have a radon measurement training and certification. And then on Tuesday, we have the environmental education, as well as the kickoff for the Coral Reef Symposium.
Right.
We have several site events going on at the same time, one for the laboratory managers, the other one for the money people, and then there's another site event for solid waste. Wednesday is when we pick the official opening of the PIEC.
I'm sorry.
The agenda, I believe, as of today, it's as up to date as you could possibly get it. We finally got a confirmation on a couple of people, and there may be one more. It's not so much a change, but I will just flesh out the details. But that's for one particular session on Thursday. What are we looking at for numbers? You know, we were targeting 250. It looks like we're probably going to be doubling that amount in terms of attendees. I mean, the walk. We're at about 400 and... I wish first you were at
479.
Huh?
479.
479 is what we have. But there's a number of people. As time approaches, people are calling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an elderly gentleman come in to ask me how to download the Hoover onto his phone. I mean, I'm talking with like 80-year-old man because he really wants to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Bank of Guam. I got an email. You saw that from Jackie Marotti, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a number of people that have not registered and they want in. We do have an overflow room upstairs. I mean, the bulk of the folks are going to come in on Wednesday. And we have an overflow room upstairs, although the Hyatt has Docomo as their ISP. We do have backup because of the live streaming that will be happening. So whatever's going on in the main ballroom will be going on upstairs in the Magellan. Let's see. Uniforms, for those of you who are going, please wear your uniform on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we have the shirts.
We have T-shirts to give.
We have T-shirts to give? Okay. So you don't leave, right, Sabrina? Yeah, so don't leave.
We'll get it now.
Tuesday, yeah. No, because it's easier to give it to them now. So Thursday, your shirts. Okay. And let's see.
Can I just interject? Some of you just went and got your measurements done, and those uniforms should be available by Monday. If you have any adjustments you need, you can go down to Vicks. Steve, we don't know what happened to yours. You're the first one to go, and yours is the only one that didn't come in. So yours is going to come in on Monday.
And it's going to be more beautiful than everybody else.
Yeah, it's going to be extra special just for you.
Indeed.
Okay.
And see, what else? There is a press conference on Tuesday. Walter's going to be there, of course, and some of the speakers. Perhaps some of the board members could join them.
Yes, please.
And all of the entire press corps will be, they're all invited, not just one group, okay? Because let me make it very, very clear. Let's see, what else?
The opening reception on Thursday night.
Yeah, so we have an opening. We're still working out the details for the mixers on Tuesday from 5 to 6, and another mixer on Wednesday from 5 to 6. There's an opening reception on Wednesday evening. It's at the poolside. And then on Thursday evening, they have the night at the museum where they have the showing of Anthony Bourdain's movie, Food Wasted.
Mm.
So, Sabrina, I know you have the details of how that work.
So what it is if you want, we have buses that are going to bus you from the Hyatt starting at 4:30 to take you down to the Guam Museum. Once you get to the Guam Museum, we are going to have the exhibits available for you to see at no charge. And we also have free hot dogs and popcorns. And then we're giving out food coupons for you to go out and buy your dinner at the food trucks. Because Thursday night is, again, a food truck. So we wanted to support all the local businesses instead of having another reception. So we think it's going to be something really fun. The actual screening will start at 6:30, and then after that we have buses that will take you back to the Hyatt. If you want to take your own private transportation, you're more than free to do that.
I think there's two schedules for the return back, right?
Yeah, one starts at 7 and the other one starts at 7:30.
On the return back to the Hyatt. So.
But everybody's going down at the same time.
Hold on, I think that this movie is an hour and a half.
6:30.
What? Yeah. Somebody told me the movie's 20 minutes. Wrong mistake. Okay.
Wrong mistake.
That's okay. We can make that adjustment. It's good we're talking this out.
Thank you for telling me so I can adjust the busing back.
Anyway, so okay. So as part of the PIEC, you will have exhibits. You'll have the Coral Reef Symposium in one area. You have another area just for the government. There's another area for the private sponsors. And at the end, where they call at the end of the foyer, out in the garden, they have an interactive art display. Okay, let's see what else. As part of the exhibit, this is why this is here. This is one of four to showcase the zero waste project. We do have a session on zero waste, but aside from that, we have this in the core. You can go ahead and.
Sure, these are our interactive kiosks. They're iPad.
You
want to
introduce it first? I'm
sorry. I thought
he did, but just to remind people.
Corey Hines from Jacobs, who's our contractor for the development of our sustainable materials management program.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to see you guys again. These are our iPad-based kiosks. We have four of them at the PIEC. The idea is that people who are interested in one of our topics, which are major initiatives, food waste, composting, zero wasting, greening roadways.
Yes, it's greening roadways, yep.
There'll be four kiosks set up like this. They can come up, interact, select a topic, find out some more information. There's going to be a general presentation on the topic with sort of some slides. There's going to be a video on each, and then a little quiz or a game that they can play. And they can go through all four of the different topics from one of these pads. So it's a nice interactive tool, and we'll have those in the lobby of the
hotel. Yeah, it'll be out there. It's amazing. And this is one of the task orders, which is part of outreach and education, but also to modernize the way we do outreach and education. Nowadays, I mean, most of the kids these days, it's all digital.
Those kids.
So, do you have any questions?
Then after the PIEC, you'll be able to take those on the road,
they have carrying cases. So, yes, we'll have some brochures, but we're really trying hard to go paperless as much as possible. And these pieces here, depend with the initiative changes, we actually can change these out too. Okay.
I'll tell you, food waste, I never thought about it, but I was up in Agana Heights, and this guy's got a pig farm back there, and he was getting from PIC, he was getting the food. I mean, it was just a colossal mess. I mean, the smell coming from the food, and the pigs are eating it, thank God, you know, but it was like, wow.
So there's more that I'm hoping some of you will be able to attend our session. So we'll unveil what we have found so far. We'll also unveil the next steps, which essentially will be the small-scale demonstration projects, because the overall goal would be this, is to do these demonstration projects, work out the economic issues, package it out so someone may be able to pick it up and start their own cottage industry. So it's not enough to just say, like with these Government of Guam documents, oh, this is what we have, this is the problem, this is what you should be doing. No, we're taking it, I've asked Jacobs to take it one step further. Okay, what is the most viable mitigative measure? Work out those details. There you go. You can, if somebody wants to come in and start a business on it, we're more than happy to make that available. Yes.
I'm just wondering if there's any. I guess there's a lot of other delegates and people from other Pacific Islands coming in, and I'm wondering if there's any like coalition building that's happening, especially given climate change and sea level rise, and if there's any sort of. So it doesn't seem like a lot. There's lots of like.
I actually have a side event on Tuesday at about.
Oh, so that's before the
that's
pre-
right,
conference.
From 4 to 5, because I didn't want to compete with those sessions. And so from 4 to 5, what we will be talking about or what we will be discussing is the development of a Pacific-specific training program in coordination with SWANA.
And so several people have been invited to include the Asian Development Bank, the World Bank.
Yeah,
exactly, because I can tell you that the folks from the U.S. Embassy in Fiji are very interested in the development of a training program.
And that's on Tuesday?
That is on Tuesday from 4 to 5. It's in the RK2 room. There's only really one room that we utilize, and that's RK2. That's the secretariat room and the site event room. It's on the way towards Niji.
Okay.
And that room will be clearly demarcated.
Is that on here?
It's not.
It's not on the schedule.
I didn't.
Oh, it's on the Wednesday schedule, not the Tuesday.
It's two. Yes, it is by invitation only. But it's there on the schedule. If you pull it up on the schedule, even if it's a side event, let's say for the laboratory, it's there.
You can't say
you can't come in.
So we can go.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It's not on this paper schedule.
Maybe that's not the most updated version,
yeah.
But
did
it's
you download
there.
The website by any chance? Or the
I've
app?
Seen it, but it's been a while. No, I haven't
so
done the app
yet. Yeah, that's a good thing.
So we make full disclosure
okay.
when we're having
yeah.
any meeting, including
right.
the environmental directors
right.
meeting. That's all there.
Okay.
There are no side meetings that are silent and quiet.
Right.
Right. It's all advertised.
Right. So what I was actually...
Yeah, I'm done. Thank you.
So I was just going to add, the director's meeting is Wednesday before the welcome reception.
Okay.
So by 4:30 in the same room that Christina mentioned, it's right across from the Hyatt gym. And so we'll be having the director's meeting on Wednesday evening, and we'll just immediately go to the banquet. The other thing of note I wanted to make sure you guys knew is I've decided that since we're only 55 strong, the agency would be closed from Wednesday through Friday during the duration of the conference so that everybody in this agency can attend. I've already discussed that with downtown, and they have not given me anything indicating otherwise. So officially, Guam EPA would be closed from Wednesday to Friday next week. So, yes.
And I did send the invitation to the three representatives from the Native Americans that are coming
yes.
in, one from the Washoe, two from the Washoe tribe, and the other one from the, one other tribe out of Arizona.
Yeah.
So so the invitations were sent so they could attend your
yes. So
event.
So what Kitchen is talking about is Region 9, U.S. EPA Region 9, not only sees the three territories of America, Samoa, Guam, or Territory
CMI.
Commonwealth, and CNMI, they also see multiple Indian nations, and they have an annual Indian Nation conference. So Mr. Mike Stoker, the regional administrator, reached out to them and said, hey, I'd like to invite the three territories, Commonwealth, to your meeting. And they said, sure, we'd love to hear what you guys are doing different with the territories, Commonwealth, versus the Indian nations. So in retribution, we said, yes, or not, but not retribution.
Reciprocity.
Reciprocity said, please come out. And so we weren't too sure if they were going to take our invitation, but three of them did. And so
Washoe and Yaqui.
Yes.
Yaqui's out of Arizona. Washoe, in fact, the one from Washoe is an environmental director.
Right.
And he's with California and Nevada.
Right. So that invitation has gone out. So we're pleased that we're going to get two Indian nations.
Can I
yes.
speak to you later about
sure.
what's their welcome? What's your welcome protocol for when they do arrive?
Okay. That's another thing. Is Guam Visitors Bureau is assisting us.
Right.
And Serena already did that because
she's
in charge of
hospitality. She'll
have
to get the T-shirt.
So we can ask her because she's in charge of hospitality.
Okay, I'll talk.
Yeah, so GVB is helping us as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for all this.
Yeah, that's
the other thing. If anybody wants to sign up for that training, they can still do it.
It's
still available. We can get it in. Yeah, for composting, zero waste, and integrated solid waste management. So, and that's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
I'm not getting any certification, but I'll be.
Next. RRF approval process status.
Sabrina, you're going to do that.
She usually gets Kristen to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The last that I had heard is it's with the AG for.
Right. Didn't they provide an email?
It was a hard copy letter from
right.
the AG's office.
Yeah, that basically said it was good, but we still had to follow the protocol with the governor's.
So they signed it?
Yes.
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 RRF status was approved by the AG?
Yes, yes.
And then, now the next step is we got to send it down to the governor's office.
Yes.
Wow, thank you.
Are you giving them already? They might not show up next week now.
Oh, don't worry. They're going to love this stuff. They're going to show up. Excuse me. Pardon my reach.
Yes.
This is for
thank
you,
Terry. Thank
you
for all
you can get a new bag. Thanks for the show.
Gonna call. Look at this beautiful bag.
Steve?
There's
three.
There's two
Steve's.
There's three Steve's. Steve.
This is all our sponsors. So in the bag, you will find
one worse
a
t-shirt.
And then you will find the metallic straws. And they have the straw cleaners in it. And you can see it's labeled with our PIC logo, too.
What about the...
And then Conchita's Pride and Joy. The rechargeable lanyard. So
it's a charging.
Even if in case you can't get to the charging machine,
use it, right?
To charge up your phone, you can charge up your phone. Okay?
Wow.
There, fancy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and it's the new Samsung.
So, the shirt there is your Thursday uniform. You can wear with blue jeans. There's the dress uniform. Yeah, and then... the one, like you pick yours up at Vic's on Monday.
Can you tell them about the cover-up? Are they going to match us? I mean,
yeah, if you want to wear, it's a sleeveless dress. If you want to wear a cover-up, you can wear white.
Please.
But if we take your picture, we want you to take it off.
Mm.
Oh, take the dress off. Holy cow. We're not looking at that.
Nothing amazing to be given out, right?
Thank you,
everyone.
We will give you your badges. The badges are all printed on recyclable paper.
There's high tech. I've never seen something like this.
And the plastic is the badge holder is also recyclable. I mean, actually biodegradable. So we really thought hard about what we were going to be giving out.
Thank you.
Okay. So. Should we jump into new business? Move on to the next. Okay, new business. We got the active NOVs.
Yeah, and so Brian's going to give a briefing on each of them.
Okay, so they're all water related.
Yeah, so one that did not make the list there I'm going to start with is the Smithbridge NOV that was issued within the last 2 months for violations of the the erosion control regulations. What they were doing is they were operating a quarry facility, it's really a clearing, it's not a quarry by name, just north of the Guam International Raceway. I think it's about 40 acres, I could be wrong, very large. Their permit had expired in early 2018, and they never renewed it, so we cited them for operating without a permit.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is currently still under negotiation. They came and they met with us. We ordered them to apply for a permit. We ordered them to come into compliance with the erosion control standards, which they were not. So they're in the process now of hiring an engineer to do that.
So do they stop all, do they cease work while
they're in that? They cease work. We told them to. Off the top of my head, I haven't been there myself. I think they've stopped work, but I can't say that.
And it's your office that does and goes to do these inspections?
Yeah, that's the Water Pollution Control Program. That's one of the programs under me, under the Water Division.
Mm-hmm. And they actually did come in. They did state that they're not challenging the NOV. They actually said that they've come into compliance with numerous of the issues, and we just need to cross-check and ensure they do. If they come into compliance, then we can tell them to go ahead and start operations, and we'll work on the buying part.
I was up there yesterday, and it looked like the machinery was going.
Was going?
Well, there's multiple quarries up
there,
so you have to make sure it's the
which
same
one.
There's
okay.
Hawaiian Rock.
I know.
There's the raceway.
Yeah, it was right before.
Permit.
I know the Smith Bridge was one of their. There says Smith Bridge right on their big equipment.
So we'll send someone out tomorrow.
Check that. But we did actually assess a proposed fine in that NOV, and it was $125,000, and that's the one that. Where in the newspaper report they said that Guam EPA had reduced the fine from 900,000 or whatever it was down to 125, but we didn't reduce anything. That particular regulation, which is passed by a statute, it gives us a maximum fine limit. So the computation came up to whatever it was, $800,000, $900,000, but the law limits us to a maximum fine of $125,000.
Is that a local law?
That was proposed.
Yes.
Yes, it's a Guam EPA. That's the Erosion and Sediment Control Regulations. They were passed by law, which is kind of unusual, but it enabled it to have some different fine amounts in there. But one of the things they put in there was a cap on how much we could assess.
Right.
So they ended up, we assessed the maximum, but they've come back and we're in the process of negotiating. Right.
Was that clarification provided to the news agency?
Yes, Nick provided that.
Okay.
And I think they even acknowledge it with like the very last sentence
but
of the article.
The last paragraph of the article states the statutory maximum.
Okay.
So the statutory maximum, that was the legislative action that...
Right. So you know, if you follow the AAA process, then usually the fines won't be incorporated in the statutes. There's the quick way where you can go to the senators and get statutes or a program, you know, approved via the statute by the senator or the senator and voted on. And when they do that, they can add things like a cap, which isn't normally part of the statutes. It'll be more designated in the regulations. But they voted on it that way, then that's what we're stuck with.
Just to clarify a little bit, the regulations were adopted by public law.
Right.
And so in that public law, there were the penalty provisions, including the maximum.
So
a cap on the maximum.
Yes.
It's just like, yeah, if someone does millions of dollars worth of damages, that just seems like a business interest.
Yeah, so what happens, what has transpired is, something, like I said, when you go through the senators and they're willing to promulgate your regulations by law, then you're stuck with what they have. And anytime you change it, you got to do it by law, which goes through the senators. The normal process is, you know, you go through the triple, like the RF is, it gets AG approval, governor's approval, then legislative approval, and you usually don't have the fines instituted into the law, because the law is the statute and the regulations are the regulations. So when the legislature approves regulations as law, then law is both statute and regs. It's kind of... Krista, can you better describe it than what I'm doing? Because I think I'm doing a terrible job on it.
I was just going to give you the public law that adopted these regulations.
Yeah, I mean, and
so
who was the senator that... Because that just sounds like kind of...
Right, it's 25152, right? That's
yes,
the public
law.
The year 2000, I believe. So
this isn't the only regulation that was brought through the legislative process as far as regulations being law. Right.
Do you know what the reasoning was for setting a cap on it?
Do I know what
what would be the reasoning for that?
I guess what I could suggest to you is if you go to look at the public law 25-152, and then included with that documentation of that public law would be their committee report and
just go to the legislative website.
Note from
the
public hearing.
The whole history of the bill through passage and committee reports.
And I believe in this case what happened was that the agency had come up with some regulations. So the penalty provisions are usually something that you're going to find in the GCA. You're going to find it, by statute they set them out. So in this case, though, the agency back then would have come up with their regulations, gone through this AAA process, went to the legislature, then the legislature has the ability to adopt them or reject them or change them. And I believe, and you'll see this if it was here, I believe what happened in this case was that they changed them to add in these penalty provisions.
To lower them, or to cap
them. To add them in at all, and then included with those. So if you go and you look at the regulations, you'll see the part about a penalty. It says that there's a penalty of up to $10,000 per day per violation. It says, except the maximum amount of any civil penalty under this section shall not exceed $125,000.
But it's worth noting, too, that if they hadn't done that and we were issuing this under the Act, the statute, which is the Water Pollution Control Act, we would be limited to $1,000 per violation per day, only accessible by the Attorney General's office. We wouldn't be able to do anything.
Yeah.
So it is, in this case, it's something that's much better than what we have by statute.
And I believe this is something that the agency has been talking with the legislature about, in addition to the other updates that they're wanting to make. Has this come up or not yet?
Well, we haven't set up the meeting yet, but when Cyrus was here last time, he asked us if we wanted to do something to fix that, and we responded in affirmative. We just have to get together with them. But since that time, just in the last month, we've discovered this limitation as it applies to so many of our other regulations. You know, we can't take action on a number of things we'd like to without going to the Attorney General's office and filing criminal charges as a misdemeanor, which means that us normal enforcement people that could just write an administrative order
have to go
all
the way to
the
agency. Yeah, there are some provisions that these guys have to enforce, that the only penalties are criminal misdemeanor penalties. And so,
is that against a person or the company?
Either one.
Yeah.
So, it's not in all of their programs, but it is like in the water pollution control. So any regulations that come out of that, that's their penalty, unless the legislature has stepped in and given these additional remedies in the regulations.
So that actually covers our erosion control and stormwater rules. It covers our wastewater rules, including septic systems, grease trap inspections that we do, and also covers the, in a separate law but with the same provisions, the water operator and wastewater operator certification requirements. So, for example, if we, and we have had this come up, we have NOVs against a water system that failed to have a certified operator on board running the system effectively, our remedy is just to tell them you have to have one, and if they don't,
there's nothing
we can do aside go to the AG's office and ask for a criminal action to be filed.
And the limitations probably aren't a limitation on damages. I mean, that's just a fine.
No, they're limited to $1,000 per violation.
The damages? Wow.
Well, damages, I don't know, but no. There's a penalty.
Yeah, a penalty is different than a damage. I mean, I think Monyeka's comment was that it limits the recovery. But if they do a lot more damages, they could be forced to pay the damage to remedy the site. It's just the penalty phase of it.
So don't forget, compliance is our always first step. And then after compliance, then we do the negotiation or discussion.
So they still have
to. But I don't know if in this particular, we didn't look at that, but in this provision, if there are any kind of damages that can be recovered. I'm just saying, I don't know if the remedies include that.
And then you won't approve permits if permits are necessary, so that makes them stop. There's lots of them.
Right, there are other enforcement tools besides a monetary penalty.
Because the idea is we want them to clean it up and stop doing it.
So they would still be responsible for that, and then it's just a violation fine. That's capped at.
In the last meeting you mentioned, I can't remember which NOV it was, but it was the cost of compliance for about $1 million, and
right.
The fine ended up being, $99,000.
And
so this is not inflation adjusted, and it's another
cost. This isn't a valuation on any kind of resource. This is just a penalty applied to what they did. So this is the erosion control regulations, right? So you're talking about two things. One is you penalize them with a penalty, and the other time I was recovering damages. But, there's nothing we can really right. quantify at this point for damages. They just worked without a permit for a while.
Again,
they had a permit, they still would have done
it. And I don't know that those are
coming. And even if they, you know, it's hard to evaluate those types of things, right? How do you evaluate the cost of the damages of someone failing to put in road control and having sediment go out? It's very difficult to compute. It's not as easy as computing as, you know, physical damage to a structure.
Especially if you don't know how long it went on for.
Well, even if you didn't know how long, it's still very difficult.
And so, so these regulations were adopted in 2000, and they haven't been
updated
since then. But it is one of the things I know that all of the programs, I understand, are working on updating their regulations.
And this one is also being updated actively by with assistance from your office, from the Attorney General's office, by Jessica Toth, with that money from the environmental...
Working with BSP.
Natural Resource Attorney money.
Right.
Yeah. But that's just the regulations, so we would also have to probably do some statute work to make it effective or enforceable.
Okay. The next NOV is the Anderson Safe Drinking Water
Program. Right, that was the same one we talked about earlier. I don't know. You guys are up to date on that,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
No need. Next one, Cocoa Palm, right?
Yep.
That one, I believe that was closed out. That was one where they had some microbiological violations, and they also have an issue with their operator being certified, which we're still working through, but that one's done. I need to remove that.
So they have their own well up there? They have their own
well, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And they have a water, because it's salty water, because it's out on, oh no, this is Cocoa Palm, sorry, this is up north. Yeah, they have a well, no, I think they truck in the water.
Yeah, they bring in potable water.
Yeah, they truck in the water, and they treat it there, but their issue there was the not having the certified operator. This is one where we gave them a notice of violation, but we cannot take any affirmative action beyond that, because of the limitations in the statute, without going to the AG's office.
And all these inspections are just site inspections, or is there like that random one, selectively?
That one was, that may have been triggered by, I think that one was triggered by a violation on their part to perform monitoring at the right time.
And you know that is there like a calendar when all these things are supposed to be? Oh, okay.
So our staff flagged that when it happens.
Okay.
Yeah. Next one is Tsubaki Hotel, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that one is, there is a final settlement agreement that we prepared. I'm not sure if the administrator has signed that yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay, but we do have a final settlement agreement in the works with them now. And that one, just to fill you guys in, that was, again, the erosion control standards. They were cited previously by the U.S. EPA, and U.S. EPA came out with their $129 fine, or $129,000 fine, I believe. Like the week before, we met with them to come up with our fine, so it kind of made it difficult for us to charge much because they'd already been kind of bled dry by the U.S. EPA. But we cited them for doing the same thing, so about a year and a half after the U.S. EPA had inspected them, we went out there and found the same basic violations. So we just went ahead and cited them ourselves.
Can we get a piece of U.S. EPA's money?
I'd like to.
No, like they did in America.
Right.
Samoa.
Yeah. So we're working with them on that. It would be... It's a little bit difficult than so it wouldn't be Guam EPA. You'd almost have to have a separate account with separate people managing the money that stays on Guam. But that is a possibility. We talked about it. We just had training by the SPCC that afforded our Hazwaste UST AST team, which is under Conchita. And I met with the inspector, and I said, you know, Feds, you guys have your rules and regulations. We've adopted ours. So if we go on a joint inspection, if there's fines, who gets them? So this inspector basically said it's negotiable. I think it's best that if you guys have the ability to fine them, that you guys keep it. So that was good news. I can't say all the inspectors will feel that way. Every inspector is different on the enforcement division in U.S. EPA, but at least for the SPCC. So, anyways, there's dialogue between us and our federal counterparts on if we have the regulatory authority locally, then we can negotiate who gets the fines.
And so, where the money goes.
Yes. If we issue the fines, then the money stays on board. If US EPA issues
to the agency in the program.
Yes.
I can answer that. So whenever there's fines that the agency imposes, the statute that authorizes the fine also directs where the money
yeah.
goes. It will say it's going to go
Hazmat
into a particular
or,
account.
Well,
okay.
whereas the federal, if they fine, it goes all the way back to the United States coffers.
And we do have statutes, by the way,
yes.
for the ASDs.
Right.
Do we have primacy now?
We don't have primacy. SPCC, the federal EPA does not give primacy for that, but it does not prohibit, which is what the Air Land Division did, does not prohibit from doing local regulations, which
so
is what we've done.
Step. Yeah,
yes.
So we have the enabling legislation,
yes.
so regulations are next. And I know for USTs, they're trying to get state
right.
program approval, so
and,
that's the formal primacy.
And that's why when he was here last week, my big question to him is, look, we have it. I know you don't. It's not an federal EPA primacy program because you guys don't give it up, but if local regs have the same enforcement ability that the federal regs do, who gets to be the lead dog, so to speak? Mm-hmm. And at least this inspector indicated he has no problems to deferring to local regulations. So that's a bonus, and hopefully that is going to be sets the trend for the other inspectors when they're here, because that's the very first one that I asked, and who gets to, you know, because again, normally primacy. The primacy programs, you know, the federal government acknowledges that you're managing this for the island. This is not a one that offers primacy, so now we have federal regs and local regs, and so with this, I took the advantage of talking to him and saying, you know, whenever you do inspections and if there's a fine, I definitely would like Guam EPA to manage it, and he said that he didn't see a problem with that at all. So at least for the SBCC, above ground storage tanks were set, so when the other inspectors come in, that's a discussion I need to have, as well as with their enforcement.
This guy for the Clean Water Act, Connor Adams, who did this one for a Subaki Hotel.
Yeah.
I just spoke to him because he's coming out here this summer,
right.
And he's agreed he will let us have first crack.
See,
so if we have the authority, right? So there's some
right.
things we can do, but there's some things he can do
right.
that we can't. So they're more than willing to work with us to make sure that
yes.
we can get that money into our funds.
Whereas before, it was just they came in, did their work, and they moved on. We kind of made it at this point that, no, if the federal EPA employee comes here, you meet with your counterparts or our counterparts, you meet with the administrator, and we'll discuss what's going to transpire during your visit here. So, yeah, we don't like them just to run roughshod through us. That's not happening anymore.
Onto Lynn's Hardware.
Okay, so the last few, they're all Lead Ban Act NOVs. So I'll just give you, I mentioned that in the last meeting. This is one where we had found that we were finding samples that were coming out of faucets and new construction that was exceeding the lead limit, which got us quite a bit concerned. We decided to start checking the hardware stores. We issued 7 NOVs total. The 4 that are listed there are the ones that are still open. We closed 3. We closed the 3 that included Home Depot, Benson Hardware down the road here, and then JK Tile over in Barragata. All of those, they had faucets that didn't have certification marks on the packaging, but they were able to provide through their manufacturer certification documentation that then we independently verified online. Mm-hmm. So we took them off the NOV. Everything they're selling is certified. The four that are on there, Lens Hardware, I'll start with that one. This is the one that has filed a notice of defense that might require a hearing. We had a little bit of trouble with him from the beginning. He did not remove. The order was to remove all the uncertified fixtures from sale and from the sales floor so that nobody could see them, so nobody was tempted to buy them, and to provide us with an inventory. It took him quite a few days beyond the limit we gave him to get that done. But he did submit a notice of defense, and we're still in the process of trying to figure out how to schedule that with a hearing officer or see if he wants to really go through with it or not. The next one on the list, Sue and Jane Corporation. That's a small store over near the old flea market. They were just selling a handful of fixtures, but we had been told that they were a source that people were getting fixtures from. As soon as we told them as soon as we gave them the NOV, they pulled everything off the shelf, submitted their inventory to us, they complied right away.
Good.
Fayang Construction Engineering, they're on route, is that Route 16 over by the mall, or is that Route 8? I always mix it up. Over by the Micronesian Mall. Across
16.
So they're over there. Another big source of fixtures, they were very slow to comply with our order. They did finally remove everything out of their sales area. But they have not given us their inventory. They have not really complied with that order. So we're looking at maybe some penalties for them. And then the most recent one was the Lead Plumbing and Electrical up in Barragata, which is kind of near Reventax. And they were very cooperative. Most of the stuff they had, we were eventually able to show that it was certified. But they did have some stuff there, some valves and some hoses that were not certified that they've taken off the shelves and are waiting for our instructions on how to dispose of them. We believe that some of those valves may have been the source of some of the samples we were getting back that were positive. It's, you know, when you hook up a faucet, there's a valve that goes up against the wall, and there's a flexible hose, and that's the faucet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's looking more and more like it's probably just been the valves that have been the real culprit. Even though we're getting some of the certified or uncertified fixtures in from China, they're all made out of stainless steel, but they're not certified. They may have some lead in them. Very unlikely, but it's probably more likely these small valves that are on the wall. That closes out the
NOV. So I just want to add, and sorry if I have cookies in my mouth, but so the water,
no food waste.
Okay. So the water division, you know, we keep very stringent tabs on GWA to ensure that their distribution system provides clean, lead-free water. The problem that Brian had noticed and that approached me about it, and we said, yeah, we need to do it, is we stopped doing our hardware store inspections. And so the things that Brian are bringing up as far as non-UL listed fixtures that may have lead, that's, as Brian had indicated, is where there may be problematic issues of people having lead in their homes or in facilities, you know, because the GWA line, distribution lines are clean, we've ensured that, but it's just a facility and residence, so that's where we're trying to curb to make sure that the island of Guam is totally lead-free. So we're good to go where we're at with GWA. Now we're just trying to re-match up with the residents so that, or, you know, what the residents and other facilities can purchase in the hardware store. And that's what we've been targeting right now.
So you notice the problems in when you're doing the occupancy permit checks, right? That's where you
yes.
notice the lead and saw a
yeah.
pattern and followed it
that's
back.
That's correct. Yeah, so hopefully we'll see a reduction in that now. If we can still continue to see that, we're going to keep looking and digging.
Right.
Maybe some other stores or maybe some other sources people are getting this from. But we'll try to track that down.
And correct me, there is manageable ways to get around it, even if you have the fixture in, like flushing the system. Is that correct?
Well, no, the way the law is written, it says you can mitigate the fixture, but there's no definition for what mitigate is.
Correct.
And as an engineer with 27 years experience and certifications and stuff, I don't know of any way that you can actually mitigate a fixture that contains...
But at least for the health concerns.
For the health concerns?
For immediate health concerns.
For immediate health concerns, if people are concerned, the advice you give them is... Don't know what's in your faucet, right? Don't get up in the morning after the water's been sitting in there all night and turn the water on immediately, fill up your cup. Let it run for 30 seconds, gets that water out. Because the way the lead comes in, right, is there's usually not much lead in these faucets anymore anyway, but there's still enough in the older ones and the uncertified ones that can cause a problem. If the water sits there overnight, the lead leaches out into the water. If you flush it out real quick, there's really no lead in it anymore. But that still doesn't make it.
Yeah.
Legal, right?
Yeah.
But it is a way that if people have older faucets, they don't know what they're doing. We put together stuff. We were worried that these NOVs were going to cause some sort of panic, so we put together some information, but we haven't heard any interest in it.
How many people do this enforcement and checks with you? Or how big is your team?
We are very small staff in the drinking. This is an entire safe drinking water program right now. We have 3 people plus myself. As a part-time helper,
yes.
We have to hire a replacement for Angel Marquez, who is the program manager, and we're hoping to hire an additional inspector. That's kind of what we're looking at probably a maximum. For
and are they EPA employees or are they?
Guam EPA employees.
Yeah,
they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm here. I'm assigned to Guam EPA. I work for Walter. I'm a U.S. Public Health Service officer, but I'm here just basically as an employee. Like, almost just think of me like a contractor.
Okay.
Everyone I work with is Guam EPA employees.
With the Lens hardware, did they remove everything off the shelf?
They did remove everything off the shelf. They have done that now. They have complied. It took them several days to comply, but they did.
So you and your team do the entire island residential, industrial
yes.
compliance?
Yes. Okay. It's amazing, especially when you consider that we are the ones taking the lead samples from every new building that's constructed, and we do like 1,000 of those a year or something.
And then you also test GWA.
Yes. Well, GWA does our testing.
And then
we look at their results.
Okay.
With the LHINs, you said they're going to do a notice of defense?
They have submitted a notice of defense, yes.
Okay.
So that's something that may come to your attention if they continue, if they decide to push it all the way
right.
to a hearing.
What do they have, 14 days or something to file a notice of appeal?
I think it's 30 days.
30 days.
And they did.
But they didn't file a notice of appeal yet, though.
Well, it's the same thing. It's a notice of defense slash intent to appeal.
And it's our responsibility as board members to be, so when a violation happens, either an NOV or something like this, it's we are the ones that vote on how to proceed, or what's
it? Well, since in this case where there was an appeal, you guys will decide, you will hear that and make a decision on that.
Right. So I guess not SOP, but what usually occurs is when an entity is issued a notice of violation, they have the option to submit the notice of appeal. To be quite honest, any entity that gets the NOV should do that, because even if they have all the faith to work out the compliance and the fines with the team from Guam EPA, you never know how that's going to turn out. So most often in the past, it was standard protocol to just issue it, and then if things didn't work out with the employees, the team of Guam EPA, then that's when they come and present their argument to you guys, and then you guys determine if there's a hearing that needs to be done, then you assign a hearing officer, and that hearing officer basically acts as judge and jury, and he hears both Guam EPA's case, the potential violator's case, and then they make a judgment on it.
Okay.
And that's where how it unfolds. Yeah.
Does the board act as the jury and the judge?
Yes.
Right. So what's the role of the hearing officer then?
To facilitate the hearing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We can also defer the hearing of it to the hearing officer, and he puts together a record and submits it to the board,
right,
and then
we can vote
off of the record and not be part of the actual proceedings of the appeal itself.
Okay.
We can defer that.
So without a quorum, though,
it doesn't
violations don't go anywhere?
No, so that's where it was really dicey for Guam EPA. If there's an NOV issue and if there's no quorum, and it fits within that time period where they can file. If someone knew that there is no quorum and there is no board,
it goes away.
Well,
it just
they're done.
They're done.
Not necessarily. I mean, they would. What would probably happen is that they'd be able to go to court. I don't know.
No.
I mean, we were trying to figure out what would happen, but luckily we didn't.
Right.
So the expansion of the board, the news about the hearing officer, that really kind of closes off that potential loophole.
Correct, correct, yes. It's before the expansion of the board, too. The board members, as you know, were also up for renewal, so we were down to...
Three or four?
Yeah. And so, it was dicey. So when Monica and Steve and Florian and Bob got appointed and they got renewed, then we're like, yes. And then when you came on, it's like, okay, we're good.
We have been at 9 for...
Yeah. We've been
10,
at 7,
years,
6
yeah.
or 7 for a long time. Yes.
Okay. Okay, where are we at now?
Lead band sampling fees.
Waste division policy updates. Is that the waste? Is that what that is?
Do, Do we do, yeah, the Water Division Policy Update.
Is that what that is?
No.
These are all, I think it looks like it's all the programs. Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, so Water Division Policy Updates.
Yeah, so we brought these to your attention. These are more like clarifications of existing regulations, but they're a big change for some groups of people, so we thought we'd better bring it to your attention. Even though it's not new, it does create a change. And the first one on the list there is the Lead Vanax sampling fees. Is that it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that one was right along with what we were just talking about now. When we go out to do these occupancy inspections, it takes a lot of our time. We have very little staff, but that law authorized us to charge a fee that was equivalent to the cost of the inspector, the hourly cost of the inspector plus 15% overhead. Mm-hmm. So we just basically started charging the fee.
Yeah,
we've
never
been doing this
it.
Now for about a month and a half. A little bit of grumbling from people out there, but you know they were getting a free service from us, and we were losing a lot of resources by doing this. So it's at least we partially recover the cost of our inspector.
Mm-hmm.
That was the purpose behind
which is
that.
Part of the law, or yeah, which part of the regulations that we can charge. So we just never did.
Oh, so there's no change to regulations.
No,
change
no
practice.
So none of these things are changes in regulations. They're just changes in what we're doing,
right.
But they're in accordance with the regulations. So we wanted to make sure you guys knew about it, because in some cases people have been complaining about these, and we just want you to know and give any feedback. Do you have it right? Am I talking out of...
I guess my question, just more generally though, is are there any other places in the regulations where EPA is not being aggressive? Like, you know,
there are a few, and not just in the Water Division. We're trying to pull them out. You know, like the air program, there was a stipulation that says that we be able to raise our emission fees without going through the full AAA process. We're still looking into exactly the legality of it, that it basically gives to the administrator, I can't remember if it's 1% or 3% every year he can raise it,
mm-hmm.
Without going through the AAA process, but it's still something we're looking at. There may be other water divisions.
I think we have some file a plan yeah. review fees that we can impose if
right.
someone comes back for a second round or something in the erosion control regulations, which we are looking into, I think.
And where are these fees, like, where are they assessed? Is there like a cashier here, or is this part of the DPW?
Well, so good question. So on the lead fees, so when somebody comes in for their occupancy permit, our inspector, he creates an invoice based on the number of hours that he's worked, and he attaches that to the occupancy permit package. And when it goes to our permits person that either works here at the one-stop center, they are given this invoice and told that they have to go to the cashier, to the treasurer, and pay, and then come back with the receipt, and we issue their permit, their signed permit. So we were able to kind of hold that against them until they pay.
Yeah, when we had this discussion about, you know, receiving payments and being a satellite office for Treasurer Guam, I said no. No, I don't want to have to build a little mini
cash cage.
I don't want to have cash that people can walk in from the street and say, let's hold up Guam EPA because we hear they got $5,000 in their coffers right now. I said no. They can go to RevenTax. They can do.
Yeah.
There's other satellite offices that they don't need. We don't need to be one.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So I said. It was talked about, and I said no. So, as Brian pointed out, it gets handled down at DPW that has the satellite Guam Treasury office, and it gets stamped there. And when it's stamped, and we see where it's stamped, and the people down there know specifically if the money is coming from this, it goes into this account.
Okay.
And so that gets all done down at the permit center.
Okay.
Yes, for this, you know, and then the fines gets to our administration's ASD, and then they submit it to the Treasury office. Yeah.
So there's fees for inspection and plan review.
There can be, but I think the plan review one, that's one I just recently heard about from my staff, and I don't remember seeing it in the regulations, so I have to go back and check, but I think it's related to something extra, right? Like if we return your plan and we have to review it a second time, I think that's when we get the charge. So
okay.
If we can, then we're going to start doing that.
Yeah.
So you work for an engineering firm, right? So be careful.
Don't say that.
So then for inspection fees, if we're going out and collecting fees, is there a goal for how long it'll take for our inspector to get out there, like from an inspection request?
He's asking, you know, the general time period for someone from the water division team to go out, collect the sample, come back.
These blood samples?
Yeah.
So they go out every Tuesday and Thursday. So they will, if someone calls up on Friday, they're going to have to wait till the next Tuesday to get the samples on this, because we can't do that. But it's so far it works,
yeah.
Okay? Occasionally there'll be somebody who's really desperate and will just go do it.
Right.
Their fees stay lower if they can do it on a day when they can do multiple, because otherwise you charge them for the entire round trip, including stopping at the laboratory to drop it off. But if it's everybody involved, then everyone just gets a smaller piece of that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 3 days is reasonable.
Okay. The permit exemption for percolation tests?
Okay. Yes. So that one was, we were finding a lot of people were coming in and not doing percolation tests in support of septic systems, right? So a septic system is designed to, your wastewater goes into a septic tank where it gets a little bit of treatment, it takes the solids out, and then the liquid goes into a leaching field, and then the soil performs the rest of the treatment, and that leaching field has to be sized based on the quality of the soil, right? And the way you determine that is through a percolation test. And so when I got here and started getting into the program, I discovered that a lot of the septic systems here were just being designed based on a guess at what that percolation rate might have been. And we were having some that were failing. We had people coming and complaining to us that if they wanted to do a percolation test, it was going to take them 2 to 3 months and cost them $3,000. Like, that's ridiculous. Mm. It should be a one afternoon thing and a couple $100. And it turned out that the reason it cost that much is because they were having to go through the entire permit process with DPW, which means it goes to 10 different agencies. It goes to DPW, it gets charged a certain fee, a huge amount of money. It comes to us, it gets charged a $250 fee, and it just takes too long. So our regulations were written in a way that would allow that to be exempted, and it's just something that you have to do to support your application when it comes in later for the building. So we looked at what we could do to try to ease that, and we decided to waive the requirement for a percolation test under certain conditions. So it has to be hand dug, it has to be less than 6 or 5 feet deep, it has to be done by a geotechnical specialty firm so that we know we're getting something that's accurate. There can be no additional clearing, grubbing, or grading, as it's all listed there. And so that's the reason why we did that one. It's allowed by the regulations, but it hadn't been practiced before.
Okay. So, clarification, a requirement for building plumbing system disinfection.
So this has been a very big change. So for a long, long time, Guam EPA, as a condition of its occupancy permits, has been requiring every building, whether it's a new home or a large commercial building, to have their plumbing system disinfected by a specialty contractor, usually at great expense, and then we examine the results and approve only after we see that they came back negative for any bacteria. A lot of questions have been thrown at me since I came in, like, how is this even legal? Why are you guys doing this? In addition to other questions, which I won't get into. But what we looked at was that our regulations, what we found, do not require this at all. It's a requirement of the building code, which is administered by DPW for large buildings only. It is not a requirement of the building code for single-family or two-family residences. So it's only required for certain types of buildings, and even then it's not required by us, by Guam EPA. So we had zero authority to be making this requirement. So we decided that, you know, in the interest of trying to speed things up, we also met with Guam Water Works just to fill you in on the rest of this, right, to make sure that they were not against this idea, because their initial thought was that, well, we like this because it makes sure that we don't have contaminated water that enters our system. And so we met with them and we discussed this and said, you know, the building code takes that into account. The building code is what covers that, and that this is a one-time cleaning of the pipes after the construction workers have left the site. It does not prevent any contamination from coming back into your line after construction is done. That's handled through backflow prevention, right? There's devices you put on your piping on commercial buildings called backflow preventers. Residences can have little check valves on their meters, which Guam Water Works does not do currently. So Guam Water Works is moving forward now with changing their connection requirements to require these check valves so that their concerns are met. But we, and to make it all short, we decided that there was no real benefit to this rule. We had no authority for requiring it, and it was costing people a lot of money and taking a lot of extra time. in the permit process, so we just decided to stop requiring it.
What, is that a backflow preventer?
No, the disinfection of the
building
water lines. Backflow preventers are still required as they are, you know, that those rules are Guam Water Works rules.
They're going to test it anyway as part of the occupancy permit, test the water quality anyhow.
No, they don't. This was the test, and it was being driven by Guam EPA on the basis of no regulatory authority.
So why did DPW put it in?
DPW didn't put it in. Guam EPA has been requiring it for many years.
Is it in the building code?
It is in the building code, but only for
large buildings,
code, right? So residential building code does not require it.
So
the RBC doesn't require it. So RBC thinks that it's adequate just to flush the system out once you're done before you connect. But the big buildings, they have to do disinfection.
This affects the small residences?
Yeah, so it should significantly reduce their cost and time.
We're
going to
adjourn here in 2 seconds.
I've known Brian for, about 20 years now. I think this is the most I've ever heard from you. Collectively, over the whole 20 years, I think,
the most
today.
Stuff.
Heard,
I mean, a single
all night very important
Saturday,
stuff, but I'm
a lot more.
Making an observation.
Okay, well,
thank you.
So, anybody got anything else? I think we've gone through the full agenda here. Does anybody have anything else?
I was wanting to know what I know Senator Regine Biscoe had that plastic bag ban law, and I know she was waiting for EPA to.
She gave us a 2-year window of opportunity to work this in.
Mm-hmm.
We went through the first year has gone by. I've reminded Sabrina, who's our recycling specialist for the agency.
Input.
So she actually thought we had a little bit more time, and I reminded her it was a 2-year window. She said yes, so we will definitely be addressing that after the PIEC.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But
anybody else?
Thank you for the reminder as well.
Okay.
Yes.
Anybody else got anything?
Just pick the date.
Next meeting.
Okay,
yeah.
Pick the date. Third Thursday of July, whatever that is.
18th. It's Liberation Week, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the 20th. Let me just check.
The Liberation Day.
18th.
I've never heard that.
18th.
18th should be okay.
I know a lot of nonsense.
Okay with the
18th?
Yes. Okay. Nick, you going to be here?
Yep, so
okay.
I get back the day before.
I should be here then.
Okay.
I'll be gone.
Okay.
That's good.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Steve, we're good.
Should be.
Okay.
I move to adjourn this meeting.
Okay.
What's that?
Move to adjourn.
That's the first thing I agree.
Seconded by Steve.
Wow. Tough crowd, man. Tough crowd.
Steve Carbolito?
Yep.